This is the Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency with information for IT professionals. For more information and to download other shows, visit www.ciaops.com/N2K. This is episode 7 with Vlad Mazik. Welcome along to another Need to Know podcast from the Computer Information Agency. My name's Robert Crane, and in this episode, from the far-flung other side of the world, I bring along Vlad Mazik. Welcome along, Vladik.
Thanks for having me over.
I appreciate you're taking time out of your busy evening. You're obviously in demand not only during the day, but also during the night. Do you want to give everybody here who may not be aware of who you are and your business exactly what you do?
Sure. I'm 24/7, man, have been since I started this business. And I think that's something that's shared by a lot of entrepreneurs out there that, you know, it's more the schedule is dependent on the opportunity, not the other way around. And that's something that I've kind of held for years. I started OwnWeb Now back in 97, at the end of high school for me. Since then, we've grown into a worldwide leader in cloud and data center solution space. We also have a security product called Exchange Defender that does all of the email, business continuity, spam filtering, web filtering, file storage, you name it. We also lately started doing a free IT management software called Shocky Monkey, funny enough. And we also have a bunch of different projects to empower resellers, VARs, MSPs mostly, and help them with engaging clients and giving them the solutions that the clients demand. You know, I've always looked at the emerging technologies and, you know, first movers are always compensated rather well, and we're at a point where the opportunity is just immense. So I do thank you for having me over. I do appreciate it. Would love to discuss this and see any way that we can help people out there.
Cool. All right. Well, I think probably the first question I've got for you is, where the hell did Shocky Monkey come from? Where'd you get the name for that?
So this actually came out a few years before Shocky Monkey was even in a concept. We had one person that, obviously we're a data center operation, so if you can imagine, there's a lot of staff that dismounts hard drives, does all sorts of network maintenance. And, you know, during the graveyard shift, not a whole lot of stuff happens. And one time, a guy went in the back of the data center to remove a hard drive, and basically he dropped it. And, you know, we decided that, you know, in a few years, a monkey is going to be doing this job. All I will need to do is drag a banana across the data center on a suspended wire, and believe me, we'll use the same fiber tracks we use right now, and the banana will slam into the server, the monkey will run after it, hit it, and it will fall apart. Then I will have another thing that will shock the monkey, and he'll run back into the data center and deal with the support ticket. And that's kind of how we got to the name Shocky Monkey. Then there was Ill Will Press thing. If you Google Foamy the Squirrel, there's a very funny cartoon, depending geographically where you're based, it might not be as funny as it is to us in the West, but it certainly is a certain depiction of a monkey being used as a part of support desk management. And the gist of it is that the monkey has a taser that he hits the support technician if he's not working fast enough. So, again, Shocky Monkey.
I think we can all probably equate to that in some way, shape, or form if anybody's worked in IT.
Sadly, yes.
Sadly, yes. So I think probably the next thing we need to and I'd like to cover is you're on the quest to write a book. Besides doing your data centers and everything else, you decided that you needed to write a book for some other to fill up that extra couple of seconds, you know, between traveling to the bathroom, I suppose. So do you want to give us a bit of a background on that and what you're trying to achieve there and what the book's about?
Oh, certainly. Well, you know, my wife has this rule that I do not get to start a new project until I finish the previous one. Being creative and being an entrepreneur, I'm always, you know, always looking to do 10 different things. And people at work hate it, as does my wife. You know, I will walk into my developers' offices and just start drawing things on the board and be like, all right, how about this? How about this? How about that? And, you know, I doubled their workload in a span of 1 week. So the cloud services came out of going to all of these IT events, we're a huge supporter of the IT as an industry, and we sponsor a ton of different conferences and events. We sponsor all of the managed services partner university, MSPU, we sponsor SMB Nation, we sponsor Microsoft Worldwide Partner Conference, Autotask and ConnectWise conferences, support the ASCII group, we support the Heartland Technology Groups or HTG. We're a huge supporter of CompTIA both in the United States and in UK. So needless to say, since I bought this new house, I've spent more time in hotels than I've spent in it. And one thing that I've learned is that a lot of people are sitting around trying to figure out how to engage this whole cloud thing. Is it a threat? Is it an opportunity? How does it transform my business? What does it do to my trusted advisor thing? Do I become obsolete? How do I make money when margins are so thin? At the end of the day, really, there needs to be a business model on the back of cloud services. But the truth is, cloud services encompasses such a huge portfolio of solutions that it's really almost like saying, you know what, I want to start offering hardware. Well, what kind of hardware do you want to start offering? Do you want to start offering VoIP solutions or switching and security solutions? Do you want to offer laptops? What kind of laptops? Netbooks, tablets, high-end laptops, work laptops, Windows, Mac? You know, there's so many different solutions in this whole cloud umbrella that there really needs to be a business model. And one thing that we've seen in the IT industry is that whenever there's a very good and simple and easy to understand business model that is documented, it can be replicated, like we did with the SBS 2003, like we currently do with managed services, a lot of people will come aboard and a lot of people will engage it. And my whole hope was that, you know, in this space, there's a tremendous amount of opportunity that is succinctly focused on the current IT solution provider. You know, this is not something that somebody that just got fired from a Fortune 500 company can just land into and start selling left and right. There's a lot more complexity and a lot more delicate handling that needs to be done, and by proxy, a lot of money to be made. So the book really was a goal of taking all of the, pardon the expression, crap that I've thrown on Vladville.com over the years and kind of simmering it down and giving it to people in black and white. And then at the end of it, asking the question, all right, now that you have all of these extremely polar opportunities, which one sounds most appealing to you? That's where you need to go first and then second and third. And then you build a business on top of all of that. Now that you understand sort of what the dynamics are and what it really is once all the vendor lies or marketing are stripped out of it.
So I think that, you know, obviously people have been doing hosting for a long time, and that's in theory in the cloud. They've been doing a lot of stuff in the cloud. Now it's just been rebadged as the cloud. I mean, do you see it as a big market shift? You know, that obviously Microsoft are now focusing on it and Google's out there, you know, totally cloud-based. Is it really that different from what's come before?
In a number of ways it is. What really kind of becomes a point of separation between solutions is where the data or the majority of processing is being stored. So it's not like your IT skills go out the window. It's not like you stop deploying one solution and start offering another. I mean, it's not something that happens overnight. But certainly the trend is to try to reduce the costs or try to improve the performance by offloading some of the functionality into the cloud. There's obviously a number of different arguments to be made here, right? Because there's an application development side of the cloud services, which is stuff that covers the evolution that we've seen in the development of the mobile device, in the development of the cell phone, in development of the personal digital assistant, and what Android and iPhone have become, and those solutions as sort of platforms onto themselves. And then there's the infrastructure side of the cloud, which is very similar to the traditional IT as we've seen and managed for well over two decades now. The integration of workstation and the client-server model, with that server model sort of shifting here and there depending on a business strategy that the customer decides to employ.
Mm-hmm.
So I hope that makes sense. That's a lot of big words for a very simple concept, which is, you know, what would fit your preference? And to some people, things of importance happen to be security, compliance, accountability, reporting, control. And to others, other criteria tend to be important, like cost, flexibility, ability to scale quickly and relatively cheaply. So there's, you know, obviously considerations that need to be made here. And there's a lot of money being thrown at this market. So, you know, one thing I always tell people, because, you know, we can touch on this in a minute, but one thing I tell everybody is like, hey, all of these companies are spending an immense amount of money marketing to your clients. All you really need to do is go in there and sell it to them.
Yeah, I think, you know, that, and obviously, you know, the turning point, I suppose, is that Microsoft's, you know, we're all in the cloud sort of focus. I mean, like it or not, that's just the way that they're moving, and that's the way that they're going to be spending money. So again, if you're able to piggyback off that, you're going to get some leverage. And again, it's not, you know, again, it's part of a business strategy rather than being opposed to it in many respects, I think. So, and in your travels and in the conversations you have with people and the feedback you get from the blog and that sort of thing, what's your general read of the, you know, the average SBS reseller and, you know, their feel on the cloud, their move to embracing it, or, you know, what's the general mood in that respect? Are there something they're going to be left behind in? It's moving too fast for them. What's your read on that sort of situation?
So I recently ran a survey for all my readers on Vladville.com, and I asked a series of questions of sort of where their opportunities were, what they're spending their money, what they're looking at. You know, it might be a little bit skewed because Vladville has a huge worldwide audience, but I spend most of my time talking to partners in the United States. And when I go to these events, clearly the busiest booths and the busiest businesses are the ones that focus on healthcare and that focus on government spending. Now, to me, it's clear that none of the people at this event have ever done any business with the government, or they wouldn't even pursue it in the first place. Getting paid by the United States Treasury is one of the most difficult tasks on this planet. But still, people believe that that is where the money is going to come, and that's where they want to go look at next. The second hype point is healthcare. There's so many people that believe that there's money there, but very, very few of them, less than 5% of the readers, said that they've made any money off of it, versus about 40% who identify that as one of their key areas. The cloud is the leading point of interest, and they're making money on it, but they're not making a lot of money. And I think that's where there needs to be a shift in thinking and a shift in solution design when SMB IT providers are concerned. We've seen this over and over again, but we recently experienced it towards the end of 2008 and most of 2009. A lot of people went out of business, and a lot of people had to make very steep cuts. That is because a lot of service providers tend to focus on a very small client base and trying to take a lot of money from that client base, which, you know, for all intents and purposes, is not really something that's terrible or bad by any means, but it is extremely risky. And the problem that that comes from assuming all of that risk is that you are now at a mercy on the performance of a select individual, you know, few customers and select few industries. So if people were very specialized in the financial industry and financial industry just got clobbered in the United States, a lot of those service providers are no longer around. The idea with the cloud is that it's not like you're going to just shift into selling hosted Exchange and fire all of your techs, and now you're just sitting there setting up Exchange accounts, and there you go, that's your salary. Quite the opposite. What the cloud enables us to do is take some of the people that we ordinarily wouldn't even consider as clients, that were too small or too cheap or just weren't at a level that would become very profitable for us, and start to offer services to those people and then grow with them. And I think that's one of the key things that the cloud has made possible that we've never had in the past. I mean, if somebody approached you with two users and your sweet spot was 20 desktops, would you stop, you know, and go over there and try to sell them all of this stuff and then have to deal with the invoice going back and forth and proposals being adjusted? Probably not. And a lot of people really shied away from the smaller client base. What we're seeing a change in the market today is that a lot of those smaller accounts are now being embraced and set up and introduced the things like SBS, introduced the things like mobile workplace and mobile phones and mobile CRM solutions and all of that. So it really is changing the landscape of how people adopt technology. But, you know, like I always tell people, maybe when you have five employees, government compliance or regulatory compliance is not the first thing that's on your mind. But by the time you're at your 50th employee and you have pain points like tracking your employees, tracking sign-on and sign-off, at that point, they start to look again inside and try to reevaluate their solutions. Cloud is not everything to everybody, much like on-site on-premise solutions are not everything to everybody. But there is a spot for everything. And so long as we embrace the full marketing power that we have, I think a lot of us are going to be doing much better, not much worse.
So do you think in this case for the average, you know, again, the average reseller who's been focused on infrastructure, is it time for them to, you know, basically broaden their horizons and look at getting into iPhones, iPads, and mobile technology and the cloud? You know, is the secret of success or the greatest opportunity for those who are able to open their minds and perhaps shift out of what they've traditionally been doing of installing drivers and inserting disk drives and those sort of things? Is that the trend that they should be following, do you believe?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, without question, that is where everybody needs to look. You know, I don't know if anybody from your audience has ever seen my presentations, but I usually start with the first slide being my contact info and, you know, dive right into it. All right, guys, here's what we do. Exchange Defender is a spam filtering solution that also does web filtering, business compliance, continuity, web filtering, la, 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 la. Can you think of any other solutions that compete with it? And people start throwing out names, BPOS, Intermedia, AppRiver. You know, I'm like, all right, I'll take the first five. I write them out on the board. Next, we sell hosted Exchange and SharePoint. It's sort of an always-on office for people that it can integrate any mobile device that they want for a very low fee and grow it one user at a time. Can any of you think of a competitor to that line of business? And people rattle off four or five different competitors. I'm like, all right, how about offsite backups? And they go through it. And then I point to the board. And I'm like, all right, how many of you like my odds here? What are the odds that I'm going to sell you Exchange Defender if you already know about Postini, about AppRiver, about MX Logic, and about, you know, three or four other solutions? And everybody just basically looks down and is like, well, you are screwed. And I do the same thing. All right, how about hosted Exchange? Anybody have faith in me there? Again, nobody. And by the time I'm like, all right, well, I wasted a lot of money trying to come out and talk to you, except all the people that I've written on this board right now are talking to your clients. And that's when I see people kind of raise their head and look over like, huh, Okay, that's probably a very good reason why we should be paying attention to some of this. And really, truth is, worldwide, Microsoft is pummeling small businesses to go in the BPOS direction. Same thing from Google, same thing from Salesforce. If you open a professional magazine, Harvard Review, Business Week, Time Magazine, I don't know what you have in Australia, but I'm willing to bet a significant sum of money that I can find at least three or four cloud solutions in there talking and marketing and heading right for that client. And really, really, it is a matter of time. Well, you know what? Your clients are already hearing about it. They're interested about it, and they need to hear about it from you. Now, as a VAR, it's up to you to decide whether this is a positive thing for you or whether it's a negative thing for you. It's up to you to decide at what margin you start offering these solutions and how you do your own value add on top of them. Because, you know, let's face it, I always ask people this. I'm like, all right, we're all going to go and do cloud solutions, right? And everybody's like, yeah. I'm like, all right, how many of your clients have Gmail? Everybody raises their hand. All right, how many of you actually sold that Gmail account to them? Nobody raises their hand. Like, oh, what's wrong? Like, none of you sat there and filled out the web form? Nobody sat around to explain any of that? And then the truth is, if we as IT solution providers allowed this cloud marketing to go on in a sense that everybody can get it just by filling out a form, then what value do we add to that equation? What sort of consulting can associate with it? And I always tell people, the day after your client has found out and asked you about Microsoft is a day that you've lost that account. There's nothing else you're going to be able to go and tell them, because Microsoft doesn't want to do business with you. Microsoft wants to do business with that end client. And they make it extremely difficult and even impossible to do business through the reseller. It's all done direct. Microsoft builds, services, and supports that client. And how the projects then get assigned later, you know, we all know how that goes. So what I try, and you know, the concept behind the book is, if all of this money is being spent to reach the market, don't look at it as a competition. Look at it as an opportunity to offer your solution stack on top of a building block that everybody believes your client should have.
So if the, you know, if somebody who's a traditional, you know, infrastructure, SBS, you know, very technical and hardware focused, limited spec, you know, what are the steps that you would recommend that they should be doing? You know, what do they need to put in place, or what they need to be looking at to start moving into this direction, considering that they've, you know, probably got their, hopefully getting their eyes opened now?
Yeah, well, you know, that's a big hopeful wish. One thing I will recommend is a lot of sanity when it comes to the cloud solutions. You know, we always focus, and, you know, my company are certainly guilty of it as well, is we often focus on the positives. Positives being very low cost, very easy entry, very easy deployment, very you know, succinct marketing that you can just offer and leave on the table and introduce people to it. What we typically don't do a very good job of is explaining exactly what is required of you to become successful in the cloud space and in the cloud market. Now, you know, just common sense. If you do business with, you know, 20 companies and you go into the cloud solutions with any reasonable amount of success, you should, within a scope or within a space of a year, have at least 200 clients that are lined up in the cloud. Well, think about what that does to your billing. You know, you're no longer billing, you know, a handful of users. You're not billing 200 companies. That's a day's worth of work on invoicing and management alone. The support, what level and what SLA is offered against cloud solutions as opposed to the ones in-house? What level of application integration do you offer? So there's a lot of decision-making that needs to take place ahead of time. What I have taught people for the longest time. And what I try to enforce out there is that every solution provider, regardless of size, regardless of resources, regardless of budget and employee base, needs to focus on making sure that a client understands that the solution that they offer is absolutely unique. You need to offer people a platform that they're familiar with so they understand that, hey, you know, if this guy should fall off the face of this earth, or the company closes down or relocates or goes in terms of pricing beyond the point that I'm willing to pay, that somebody else can support and help us migrate and integrate all these third-party applications. That's one consideration. The other consideration is that the product needs to be unique enough that it isn't a commodity, because we all know what happens with your margins when your product is considered a commodity. So people that are going into a cloud services paradigm need to first sit down and decide what product they're going to offer, which vendors, what product mix, at what price, at what profit margin, how it's packaged, how it's offered, how it's supported, and then figure out the value adds and how that makes you different from anybody else down the street. Because the truth is, there's only one Microsoft Exchange. There's only one Google Apps. And, you know, to a great degree, most people might be able to figure it out on their own. When people become too busy to manage their own infrastructure and start thinking competitively about being bigger and better in the marketplace, which is what our tools enable them to do, I always try to position everything like, hey, this is going to help you get to that next goal, to that next level, to that next opportunity. We're going to reduce all of this stuff that you're currently dealing with, and you can focus on this, you can focus on that. And you find that in the interview, like, hey, where's this company going and why are you looking at this in the first place? And, you know, they'll tell you what it is. Maybe the cost is a driving factor. Maybe a competitive nature is a marketing, driver. You have to define where you're going. And that when you've established that you can help them move from where they are to where they need to be, then you offer your solution in a way that uniquely fits their needs. And I think that that is something that a lot of IT solution providers can get done in a span of one day. It really is not a very complex thing. A lot of cloud providers have very good marketing stuff that is tried and true, that we know works out there, that we've had thousands of different partners pilot and be successful with. So collect all of those brochures and make sure that you're leaving those behind when you do your visits, when you go to new office spaces, when you visit new clients, when you're doing trade shows. It needs to be an offering. It needs to be a way to get into the business and get them an offer, because people love to buy, and people love to buy locally, and people love to deal with folks whose face they can see and people they can go out to lunch with and discuss the business strategy, find a solution to a problem that they need. Now, unfortunately, they want to have all of that stuff provided at a third world wages, and they also want the scalability and redundancy of a full-on enterprise solution. Not every single zip code and area code in town is going to have that kind of a solution locally. And for a number of arguments, it's probably a good idea not to even have it near where your business is at. So, you know, there's a lot of considerations that go into it, but the key is establishing a business process that is easy to replicate, that is easy to explain, so everybody can get aboard on it and see it for what it really is.
Is it also a case, perhaps, of also you've got to throw away stuff, as in stuff that you've done for years you might really love and it's really fun and you get a real buzz out of it, but at the end of the day, if you're in business, you're going to have to throw some of that away to offer something else or to become up to speed in other areas, do you think?
That depends on, you know, level of comfort that you have with the type of business that you run. Obviously, we always have to prioritize and, you know, deal with the limited resources, no matter how big you get. And I can tell you this, you know, every single time I look at my company, I feel like we're not big enough to do what we need to do. And that for me stems from the fact that I compete with the likes of Microsoft and Google and such. But what it really comes down to is you have to commit to a business model and to understand that, you know, you're not going to make millions of dollars off of a cloud infrastructure solution today or tomorrow or maybe in the next month. It will take you up to a year to go through and, you know, stay diligent and work on it and perfect your pitch, perfect your solution, perfect its vertical integration, perfect the appeal, and then deal with the clients who may have a very long purchase or decision-making process to undergo. One thing that you see with the cloud, particularly if you focus on the infrastructure side of the house, is that people will have to consider it. There might be some budget constraints. But you know what? If the budget constraint is, do we sign up for this CapEx subscription, or do we buy new hardware, new licensing, new software, new equipment, and new everything, and then figure out a way to finance it and set it up and configure it and deal with the migration issues? At what point does it make sense? And your collateral and your marketing and your sales approach need to be able to justify something like that. So if a company is considering migrating into the cloud, and the cloud subscription over the 2 years is going times what it would cost them to buy a new file server, then perhaps that is not the way you want to pitch that to the client. And perhaps that's not a solution for them. And don't be afraid to say that, you know. This is not for you. For a lot of people, it is. For many people, it may not be. That's where you come in, and that's where you make your money. And I tried to explain it to people. You know, the engagement on what you sell in the cloud is not the same as the engagement of what you sell in the office. The idea and the whole business model of the cloud is that with a wider net, with more fish, with a larger client base, come more referrals, comes more business, and then eventually come more projects. You're basically recruiting these customers and helping groom them into more profitable clients and becoming more aligned with their business. You know, one thing that I just can't stand is when some of these one-man shops come up to me and talk to me about, oh, I'm a trusted advisor. How in the world do you go in front of a small business owner who you've never met and have the audacity to be like, I'm here to be your trusted advisor? Like, I don't trust you as far as I can throw you. And let me tell you something else. There's five other people that walked in exactly the same pitch. And guess what? Some of them were even cheaper than you, and they offered more. So what is it that you do around here? And that's, you know, a difficulty that we face in small business, regardless whether you're doing technology or laying down carpet or repairing cars. Trust is something that's built over time and something that requires performance, requires presence, requires being able to contribute to the overall community and to that client without asking for things in return immediately. And that's where a lot of people fail. They're like, well, you know, sales are not doing too good. I'm like, well, how long have you talked to this client? What have you sent them? What kind of information are you providing to them to make a good decision? Because if you just had one appointment and you talked to them and that was all it took for you to disqualify them, well, you know, you need to talk to them and figure out, A, if there's something else that you might need to look at, you know, which direction are you trying to go? What's your timeline? And by the same token, don't be afraid to ask if they know somebody else that might be able to use them. Don't be afraid if there's anybody else out there that you could potentially count a business or offer a solution to, and present yourself as a business. Entrepreneurs love talking and working with entrepreneurs. And the dirty secret is most of us aren't buying each other's stuff all the time. You know, I know a ton of people in the auto industry, but, you know, I have four cars. I know a lot of people in the finance industry, but I only have two banks. You know, there needs to be a track record built in, and there needs to be a level of business leadership that you need to establish in the community without looking explicitly at what it can do for you.
Mm-hmm. And what about the the concept that maybe it's time, if you're a small man operator, to look at some consolidation, look around at somebody who may, be able to enhance your skills or offer something you can't, and then partner with them and then go to clients and offer them a better solution. Is that a viable option, do you think, in this day and age?
I believe so. And it's one of those things that that a lot of people don't understand, and a lot of people end up failing in the pursuit of, going from small to big. Not everybody wants to be really big. Not everybody wants to be a manager. Not everybody wants to deal with employees. There's a lot of really cool things you can do, because when you're small, you're mobile, you're agile, and you're flexible. So you can take on different projects and different things that others may not be able to engage in fully if they have to consider all these other things. Also, what you can do that others can't is offer additional perspective and offer additional resources, information, especially if you're not looking to make money off of every little thing. Blogging has been an explosive part of my business. In terms of marketing, I was, even up until the point that we had over 50 employees, I was the marketing department, if you know what I mean. My blog to this day brings in more leads and more business than all the other events, mail campaigns, mail tracks, webinars, and direct in-person events that we do and sponsor around the world. My blog beats it out, mostly because it is designed around the fact that I don't sell anything on it and that I offer perspective from what I have learned. To a lot of people, that is incredibly valuable. And small solution providers should focus on that quality, that in being small, they understand the needs of small business, and they understand the ways in which they can help position technology to help somebody that's interested in grow. Now, how you go from small to making money, that is a very personal decision to make, and one that I obviously can't offer any useful feedback, because I've always wanted more, and I've always wanted to build a very large company and build a very big type of a product. I wanted to solve people's problems. There are people out there that are interested in having a more intimate relationship, that are interested in being more aligned with what their clients need. But that doesn't mean that they can't have a lot of clients, that they can't have a very large mix of solutions, that they can't refer and get the real expertise when real expertise is needed in some very rich engagements that they do. So, again, it really does depend both internally and externally what the opportunity is and how money is to be made. Not all of us have the same level of ambition and same level of desire or the same level of expectations. I remember that, when I started this business, all I wanted to do is make six figures. That was my goal, $100,000 a year. At that time, it was the world to me. Now I have cars that cost many multiples of that sitting in my garage, and a house that costs many multiples of that. For me, money is not a motivating factor, though. It's a solution design. It's making sure that we address the problems and we see people through to what their ambition is. My ambition has always been in communication security and continuity, because I know what it's like to be down. That's how I was raised. I was always solving IT problems and was dealing with computer issues and computer problems and security and hacking and all of that. And I wanted to make sure that my body of work eliminated that problem from the SMB. There's a lot of other people out there that are extremely passionate about what they do, and you can engage that to make it a real business. Now, it depends on if that's all you want your business to be, or if you want to extend the same type of opportunity to others that could work for you, or what you're trying to do for your clients, or what kind of positioning and satisfaction you need from the way you live your life.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what's your your take on obviously the Microsoft's new product, the SBS product, especially Aurora being the hybrid interface to the, you know, to the cloud. What's your take and feel on how well that'll be adopted? And obviously there's the SBS 7, which is the infrastructure version. I mean, is that going to be a valid, or is everybody going to be moving, you know, more of their stuff to the cloud and skipping that sort of step, do you think?
I'm going to make a prediction here, and guessing that the Aurora SBS 7 and everything associated with it is likely going to be a flop, for one simple reason. People buy gadgets and people buy solutions. Would you agree with that statement?
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, generally that, you know, people are moving towards the mobile, you know, the mobile phone, the, you know, the mobile device. They want the iPad. I mean, we've seen, you know, the iPad appearing in more and more places. And again, at the other end of the day, computing has become a utility. It's become, I just want to come in and, like electricity, turn the light switch on and everything works and I get one bill. So, no, I think that's a very valid statement.
Yeah, and I think, you know, more towards the end tangent, anybody that's not familiar with the statement that Robert just made, the book is called Flipping the Switch. You can get it anywhere. It's called Unleashing the Power of Technology, Flipping the Switch. The author is John G. Mayer, I believe. And basically his, sorry, Miller, John G. Miller. And he wrote this book on helping people understand what the, you know, what switching and using technology is really all about and what we're kind of trending towards. Now, in terms of Microsoft, Microsoft has been, I'm sorry, I just Googled this thing to find out. It is called Flipping the Switch in Technology, and the author is Eric Brendy. Great book that you can kind of find out is how the, you know, businesses are moving in what direction and, you know, what the technology really means to people who are very technology ignorant. Now, my statement in terms of thinking of it as gadgets or solutions, Microsoft is in a very tight and almost confused state at this point where it can sell gadgets, so it's capable of selling things like Windows Home Server, but selling it as an appliance that is very un-Windowsy in every possible way. You know, no head mounts, no PS2 connectors, you know, no keyboard, no monitor, nothing. It's just a server that sits in the background and connects all these devices that are in your house or when you're mobile. That's a gadget aspect of it. Then, on the other side, we have the solutions. And solutions are honestly a realm of the IT solution provider. Nobody cares what the building blocks happen to be, because we as solution providers look to get ourselves in front of the customer and solve their problem. That's what we do. That's how we make our money. We don't make our money making 3% or 6% selling Microsoft's crappy software that requires 30% year over year to just keep patched and alive and online and running. We make our money as solution providers on creating a, you know, reasonable level of reliability, accountability, reporting, monitoring, management, data protection services, etc. So we take these building blocks, being Exchange hosting, SharePoint hosting, or SBS servers, or standard servers, or live communication servers, or VoIP, or faxing, or conferencing, or accounting, whatever it may be, and we put together solutions for a small business. Microsoft has lost the edge and has lost visibility into what users actually want. And they've lost it, you know, they've lost that battle several years ago. You know, we've seen EBS basically come on board and disappear as quickly as it showed up, mostly because Microsoft had an idea that appealed to IT administrator problems around year 2000, 2003. And by the time it came out in 2007, 2008, it no longer made any sense to anybody that dealt with IT solutions in the 21st century. And I think that's something that Aurora and SPS 7 are going to find when they debut, that to a great extent, it's going to be the same old, same old. People will be updating existing infrastructure, and they may use it in some shape, way, or form. But I believe that people who are the most savvy, who are heavily adopting the cloud, will not be looking towards Aurora, because it really offers very few features, given the price tag, that the customer cannot obtain from an existing server that they already have, that they've already sunk money into, that's already being managed, that already runs. And as managed service provider movement keeps on maturing to a great extent, it really doesn't matter what's on that server. What matters is the data protection, the reporting, the management, the accountability, the reliability. And if all of that can already be delivered, why would we want to look at a new solution that Microsoft is pushing, when Microsoft, by all accounts, has been probably the slowest company to adopt the cloud and go into the cloud, which is astonishing considering their success as a software company. So I really do not see a lot of success out of that platform, simply because of the type of businesses that we've had to develop because Microsoft was not there when we needed them. Aurora would have been incredible 2 years ago. At this point, not so much.
And what's your take on, I mean, to me it seems that the lower end of the market, the, you know, under 25 users, is becoming a pretty crowded location. You've got, in theory, Aurora when it comes out. You've got SPS 7, which could still fit into that space. You've got Home Server. You've got Foundation Server. There's a lot of stuff in that space that makes things very complicated, doesn't it?
I believe so, too. I think that's one of the areas where Microsoft is going to get very little support and will face more questions and opportunities. Because when you flood that market, if Microsoft cannot quickly and easily explain the difference between SPS 7 and Aurora and WHS and Windows Foundation Server and Windows Standard Server in a way that you can position with your client, it's a no-show. You know what I mean? I mean, the Microsoft, and they do this in every presentation, you know, this whole concept of choice. It's not choice when I have a wall packed with shit that I can't understand. You know, oh, this one can work with two processors, but you can't join it in a domain. This one will work in a domain, but it has no RAID level support or the ability to add third-party hardware. This one, on the other hand, works perfectly fine up until you have the 15th employee, where the migration to a full server is going to cost you thousands of dollars. Meanwhile, this thing is available, but it doesn't work with your Salesforce and is going to require me to be on site for the next 2 weeks trying to migrate all of your legacy stuff. I mean, you see how that completely confuses the client? More choices paralyze the client because they have to make a decision. And now you're asking them to make a decision that they're going to have to stick with for 3 to 5 years at a minimum. And that's not easy to do.
And, especially when they've got to pay up front.
Yeah, especially when they have to pay up front or have to deal with a potentially very expensive or very long-term type of a commitment, because, you know, every change is scary. But if your change involves you paying something as a subscription and you can cancel it at any time versus pay for hardware maintenance, management, installation, deployment, and migration up front, and then still continue paying for management and managed services and all the other licensing we need to add on to it, then you have another solution. Then on top of that, you're complicating even further by saying, well, we can save you some money if we go this route, but if you go past this number of employees, it's going to cost you this much. I think that's where Microsoft is making a monumental mistake, and it's also the area and reason why they've lagged and failed to such a large extent in the area of cloud solutions. When you look at BPOS, pardon me, when you look at something as simple as BPOS, Microsoft has four pricing tiers within BPOS alone. Now, again, that comes with additional complexity of Microsoft wanting to sell directly to the end user, completely locking the partner and the solution provider out of the spectrum, completely devoiding entire solution of third-party developers and third-party solution providers, and then, you know, further complicating it with what can go on-site and what can go off-site. I mean, for Pete's sake, they're selling Exchange 2007. 2010 has been online for months, and Microsoft, who's supposed to be the leader in this whole cloud and they're all in, is selling an outdated version of Exchange without providing a copy of Microsoft Office, which makes them a de facto leader on that desktop, creating a confusing SKU selection on their Office suite. I mean, it really begs to question what those people that make decisions in Microsoft are thinking, because it clearly is very, very foreign to any kind of a small business that is out there trying to grow, trying to move, and trying to deal with scarce resources to create a technology portfolio. And by adding more stuff to the stack, Microsoft is not making our jobs any easier.
Okay, so interesting comment. I think, you know, a lot of validity and a lot of things for people to consider, you know, coming down the track. So as we're sort of drawing towards the end of our time, what I'd like to just get your opinion and your feedback on is, obviously, OwnWeb now, one of the products they do offer is SharePoint hosting, and SharePoint being a product near and dear to my heart. What are you seeing the uptake of, you know, SharePoint from your point of view? Is it growing? Is there more demand? Is it, do you see that's a, you know, a valid cloud solution, or it fills a space? What's your take on the reason that you're offering that to clients?
So the primary reason that we offer SharePoint, which is growing, though hopefully, or I would say unfortunately, in a wrong way, is it's a growing on the back of the web dev. What's happening, and the way that we pitch it, which is, you know, kind of unique, is we consider the hosted Exchange with Exchange Defender and SharePoint, in a way that I explain in a minute, as a component to your remote office, where it really doesn't matter whether you have a server or where that server happens to be. Now, naturally, all of your business continuity and security is taken care of by Exchange Defender. In Exchange, you have all of the enterprise-level calendaring, messaging, data, searches, and custom forms that you can create to make your office and your collaboration with multiple teams easier and more manageable and more secure. But that always leaves a question of, okay, but where does my data sit? And that's where SharePoint comes in. With SharePoint, you can map document libraries as drive letters in any Windows OS. So that in itself creates an ability for people to think of SharePoint as their remote document library that is just like your hard drive in the sky. And this enables you to share folders and to share documents and to share files quickly and easily with the same parameters that you see on your desktop or on your LAN. So now if you're in the office or in the hotel or at home or anywhere else, you're able to quickly just double tap that drive letter and be able to access your SharePoint document library as a file listing in Windows Explorer and download all the pictures. Now what that further involves SharePoint in is, once people realize, oh wow, this is very powerful, now we have our documents anywhere we go, and whatever we do, we have it ready then and there. Then the extension of the portals, then the extension of all the custom applications and the ways that external parties can be involved in that area, that creates even more momentum to them to use the solution and to involve a solution provider in helping them design something that speaks and understands their business better and creates a little more accountability along the way. Because that, you know, those are the business, the core businesses problems that we all deal with. We all have cash issues. So, you know, money coming in versus money coming out. We all have sales issues. How do we make more money? And then we have the issue of how are we spending our money? And IT solution providers have that area cornered. We should not be ashamed of going in front of a business and when being prompted, what do you do? Instead of saying something stupid and generic like, well, we manage small business networks and SBS servers and workstations and your computers, saying something like, we make it easier to understand where your money goes. We make it easier for you to utilize the technology you already have. Because believe it or not, there's not a huge, huge opportunity out there for you to sell a next server. I'm not lying here. This is a Microsoft pitch. And we've done business with Microsoft for as long as I've known them, even before OwnWeb now. Microsoft has always had that illusion of marketplace, that pie in the sky. I dare you to watch a Microsoft webcast where they don't show that $80 billion SMB opportunity. And no matter what it is, Microsoft's got $80 billion that you're going to be able to make, whether it being selling Windows Mobile operating system that doesn't exist and is based on the colossal failure that Zune has been, all the way up to very successful businesses on top of Windows Server and all of its little permutations. They always have that $80 billion chart. Look at all this opportunity. Look at all this huge market. Well, you know what? The market to install the next small business server just ain't there. But they probably have technology that you can get paid to have them use better and more efficiently. I can tell you that that is the marketplace that is overwhelmingly underserved. You know, there's a lot of people with small business servers that don't even know what SharePoint is and what it does. But implementing that, developing that, explaining that, and making it become a critical business tool is why we are in business.
Okay. So I suppose the last thing that I'll get some feedback on, which I think you've just touched on, and we probably already know what your feelings are based on that last statement, is what's your feeling on the likelihood or the success or the penetration of the Windows Phone 7? What's your take on that? Is that going to be something that flies, or are we going to go Android and iPhone, do you think?
I don't think Microsoft stands a chance at all.
Okay.
That's as simple as I can put it. I mean, you know, I've had many Windows Mobile devices. If you followed the development, Microsoft will ship Windows 7 without any third-party development. They'll ship it without a concise, proven operating system. So all of us that, you know, looked at Windows CE, etc., have had a huge question mark on top of Windows Mobile, what it will do and how it will do it. And the problem is Microsoft Mobile is being managed by the same management that brought you the Microsoft Turtle and the eventual device of Danger and their popular Sidekick product. Yeah. Microsoft Mobile is being brought to market by the people who have time and time again failed in the area of consumer electronics and mobility. So their opportunity to compete in a marketplace that's dominated by something extremely free and something with extremely high level of quantity and third-party support, I mean, where does Microsoft develop and bring their solution? iPhone has a nearly complete area spot, you know, dealing with the developers and third-party solutions, and Android is completely free for anybody anywhere to use in any way, shape, or form that they want. So what does Microsoft bring that isn't served by those two? Now, you know, I would caution a lot of people not to dismiss them outright. You know, this isn't Vlad saying don't look at it. You should look at everything. The more you think is something that isn't interesting to you, the more attention you need to pay to it, because you never want to let the opportunity go away, especially if that opportunity is being launched by a company that puts down $30 to $50 billion a quarter on their profit sheets. But, you know, there is also a huge industry out there and a huge level of dominance exerted by the likes of Google, BlackBerry, Nokia, Apple. And what is Microsoft going to deliver in a marketplace that everybody else isn't doing yet? Microsoft has only had one successful consumer product, and that's the Xbox. Everything else has been a flop. Everything from Encyclopedia Encarta to Live.com to MSN.com to whatever it's being called today. You know what? Hotmail is a technology that they acquired. So I don't know to what extent that counts, but Microsoft has not been successful in the consumer space, and they continue to launch solutions from a business mindset into consumers' hands, and consumers don't adopt. Outside from us geeks that will play with anything that integrates well that we can play with, Microsoft needs to answer a lot of big questions, and it's not the same Microsoft that was around at the turn of the century that we've dealt with a, you know, complete monopoly and users' expectations to sync stuff with a desktop. If you look at Android, for example, Android comes with no desktop syncing software at all. At all. You know, there's no active sync for an Android desktop. There is no, oh, how do I copy my contacts to it? You know how you copy it? You hook your Android up to your Gmail or to your Exchange or to your POP3 IMAP, you name it, type of a software, and it pulls all of that stuff down into the device, which is constantly being backed up to the cloud. So it's a whole different paradigm that we're dealing with, and mobility has taken a step from being something that mobility meant you could interact with the applications and your environment in the office when you were on the road, to road really being something that's in your house and the server just happens to be somewhere else containing all of your data, all of your pictures, music, media, and you name it. So there has been a huge shift and a huge paradigm change that to a great degree has gone unnoticed because, you know, we're still holding on to our bright, shiny laptops, workstations, and servers. But a huge amount of workload and a huge amount of lifestyle integration has been done through the phones and tablets and smart devices around the house, around the office, in the car. So, you know, Microsoft is entering a different world these days. So, you know, I don't mean to bash Microsoft in any way, shape, or form, but we do need to be cognizant of the fact that we
all... Okay, so we should be back online now. So apologies to listeners for the slight technical issue that happened at this end. So we're obviously reaching the end of the time that we've got with Vlad, and we don't want to keep him away from his family for too long. So what I might get you to do, Vlad, is, you know, in discussions that we've had, you know, do you want to just round up and summarize and, you know, what do you think are the most important things that we've covered today for, you know, the people that are listening, which are typically, you know, IT professionals in the SMB space who may or may not be struggling with, you know, the cloud issues?
Sure. Well, you know, whether you're struggling with the cloud or not, I hope one thing you took away from this presentation and from literally everything else that I do out there is that success in business, really any business, comes on your ability to convert on the opportunities that are being presented. Now, not every opportunity is worth taking and not every client is worth pursuing. But what we're seeing with the cloud services and with the investment that's being made by virtually every vendor that you work with is that now is the time to engage, to come up with a business model, and to build your own cloud offering. Whether that's something you believe in or not doesn't matter. What matters is that you have something to position to your clients so when they decide that that is the way they're going to go, regardless of what you may think, they go down that route, well, you should still be the one to lead them that way and to provide them with the support and care and migration and everything else that they need along the way. that really is the key to everything now. I certainly appreciate the time, Robert, and I would be more than glad to come on and talk at length in anything that you guys are interested in. By all means, try to visit my blog at vladwell.com. Communicate with Robert what you liked, what you didn't like, what you agreed, what you disagreed with, so he can provide you with more and more of this type of content. I mean, you know, you have to understand that not everybody has this golden solution that's always going to work. So that's why we spend our time putting together podcasts such as this one, and why we all spend so much money and time to perfect our practices and what we deliver. So what's certain is that we're facing very uncertain times in the SMB IT. What's also certain is that selling things in SMB is becoming more and more difficult because a crowded space with a lot of providers and a lot of solutions is confusing the clients and making them more impaired when it comes to making a decision. So our goal as solution providers needs to be to create more cost-effective solutions, to provide solutions that are easier to understand, position, and implement, and to provide the level of service that our clients require and demand. Because that, at the end of the day, is what's going to keep us in business and keep us growing and keep us motivated to keep on coming and innovating and creating better and more appropriate solutions for every client that we interact with and help them do more with the technology that they spend their hard-earned money on. So that's all we got.
Yeah, I think the other thing, too, I suppose I would add to that is that, you know, it's a good time to turn to people you know, who are doing this sort of thing, who are, you know, expressing opinions, expressing ideas, trying to work out what's going on, because everybody's trying to learn the process and understand it, and it's not something that you really makes a lot of sense doing on your own. I mean, there's so many resources out there and options and that, but there's a lot of people out there who are also in the same boat. So again, it's a matter of listening to those people, ponying up with them, asking questions, contributing, building a, you know, a knowledge base around that. But again, it's again, I think the takeaway is, if you're in a, you know, in the big ocean on a little raft, it's only a matter of time before the sharks get you. You know, you really need to make sure that you can widen your horizons and see what else is out there in all respects, and look at it as a business rather than just, you know, a technology.
Yeah, certainly. And that's, you know, that's what really builds long-lasting companies and long-term business success. And that's, you know, thankfully, that's something that those of us who have learned the hard way are willing to share with those of you that are just starting up and considering it. And, you know, there's really, this is not a fan contest. You know, I'm sure a lot of people would disagree with my opinions, but that's why this community is so rich and so vibrant and so valuable to so many of us, that we can help each other understand the standpoint. Because if you disagree with it, chances are there's a lot of other people that disagree with it as well or agree with it. And whenever you can have that kind of an environment, you can create a lot of money and a lot of business success for you and your family. So from mine here in the United States at 9:17 p.m., thank you for having me and thank you for listening to me.
No problems. Again, we thank everybody for listening. We thank Vlad for his time today, and we hope that you'll see you again on another Need to Know podcast. Thanks for listening. This podcast has been brought to you by the SharePoint Operations Guide. For more information, visit www.wssops.com. To provide feedback on this podcast, please visit www.ciaops.com/contact.